This NBA season, make every three-pointer, alley-oop, and buzzer beater even more exciting with FanDuel. You can bet on everything from first baskets and number of dunks to which player will drain the most threes. Or stack your bets with the same-game parlay for a shot to win even bigger. It's quick, easy, and you'll get your winnings fast. So download the app today and see why we're North America's number one sportsbook. Make every moment more with FanDuel. 19 plus and physically located in Ontario. Gambling problem? Call 1-866-531-2600 or visit connectsontario.ca.
Hey, that's pretty bad. Of course, it's not that bad, but the Raptors play a pretty entertaining game that included, I think, records on both sides, because Grayson Allen hit 7 threes in the first quarter, which was a record for the Phoenix Suns. And Emmanuel Quickley has 18 assists, which I believe is his, actually, it might not be his career high, but certainly his highest as a Raptor. 18 assists. He had as many assists, one more assist than shots taken in this game. Finished with 21, 18, and 9. He was sublime. Coming away in this game as a plus two, plus minus isn't everything, but sometimes it can really help quickly convey, quickly convey just how impactful somebody was. And I thought this was his best pick and roll game as a Raptor. It also helps that he played more minutes with Chris Boucher, who is a very diligent roller. An energy guy who created extra possessions for the team as well. And on top of that, we get some fun Grady stuff. He gets up 10 threes. I love that. Some no-dip threes, some really great shot prep, and a really, really tough stretch for him at the end of the third quarter and to start the fourth. But we get a really fun game with Quickley popping off. I thought that Barrett, you know, maybe they needed more volume from him. Maybe they needed a little bit more pop. 23-4. He comes in once again, 56% from the field, efficient as ever, as he generally is with this, with the Raptors. He's been super impressive. But this was a night where the team did have longer droughts offensively, and maybe they could have used a little bit more, but I can't turn my nose up at 23-4 on 56% shooting. Only one turnover. He had four assists. Like, what more do you want, really? You can want more, and that's okay, but like to expect more and be upset if it doesn't come to fruition doesn't make much sense. The Raptors played a good game. They got burned early on, the same way they got burned by Trey Murphy in the Pelicans game. And I honestly don't blame the Raptors for their approach initially, and they got burned really bad, but I'm glad that they changed it. And so what the Raptors did, basically the crux of what they did, was very similar to the Pelicans, who the Pelicans hit 24 threes. They finished, I think, like almost 50% on their threes that game, 24 of 49. The Suns in this game go 15 of 35 for 43%. Grayson Allen is 8 of 14 at the end of this thing. I'm pretty sure he started 8 of 9 or 8 of 10. A lot of that, some of those were wide open, yes. Some of them, he kept extending his range out to like not 23, 24 feet, but we're talking about like 26, 27. Really impressive stuff from Grayson. He's been not on volume, but by percentage, like hanging around the best three-point shooter in the NBA this season. He's been unbelievable for the Suns. He was great in this game. And the Raptors showed a lot of attention on drives and doubled a lot of the post entries on Kevin Durant, for example, and Bradley Beal. And of course, they still converged on Yusuf Nurkic and Drew Eubanks down low. And so the big change that the Raptors made to kind of get back into this game was not to send as much help on the drives or the post entries, but to still keep converging once everybody got into the paint. And honestly, that was a fantastic change for the Raptors. It helped them control the three-point volume a little bit more, and not necessarily that the other team couldn't get shots up. The Suns kept shooting, but more so that the Suns are playing a little bit against like harder closeouts. There's not as much room to get into it. And Grayson Allen, he's a fantastic shooter, but the whole game, is he going to keep stepping back to 27 feet and hitting? Certainly not. You know, as Nesta brings up here, all credit to Boucher tonight. His energy and hustle needs to be used to help establish the new team culture. He was awesome. I know like Kelly just signed the deal. He's with the Raptors for the foreseeable future. And he wasn't the best big on the Raptors tonight. It was Chris Boucher was awesome, man. 11 points, 9 rebounds in 23 minutes. a lot of that came in the second half because I think Darko realized, like, this guy's kind of on a wave. He has an effervescence. He's able to impact the rest of the guys who are trying to get a little bit of energy, let's say. Coco says, so nice to see Boucher again. He probably felt nice being out there. Keir Doyle says, Samson, talk about the play early fourth quarter that looked like Spain pick and roll, and IQ ghosted someone. Chris was screening as RJ dribbles left. RJ passed to IQ, bank three. Brother, let me tell you something, Keir Doyle. If I didn't draw up three variations of that play, I'll eat my hat. It is called Spain leak. That is what that is called. Here we go, everybody. We're going to get into it early. We're going to diagram a play. Here it is. This is Spain leak. The Raptors ran four variations of it to enter into it or to counter out of it when Phoenix loaded up on it. It's a great play, and it is kind of funny because the CP3 Suns that made the finals and were like popping the hell off, they kind of started with Monty Williams. They ran so many different variations of Spain, and they would use such interesting concepts to get into it. And so to see the Raptors kind of sustaining their fourth quarter offense against the Suns with Spain was pretty fun. So basically, the crux of Spain, or stack is what it's called in the NBA, is you add a back screen into the pick and roll, which traditionally has freed up the roller for a lob or a post entry. But since the lane is kind of congested with that back screen, typically you go with a vertical pass. So, and Keir Doyle says Darko was an assistant for that Monty Williams Phoenix team, right? You're absolutely correct. Who else was on that Monty Williams Phoenix team with Darko who helped put in the offense, design the offense? Ricky Rubio of the Spanish national team. I'm being like a nerdy college professor who's like, ooh, this is my, you know, this is my special interest. But anyway, so the crux of it is that back screen being added. So when teams load up, what you can do instead of sticking that back screen is you can exit out of it. So basically what's happening is RJ is at the top of the arc. He's going to run a regular pick and roll is what it seems like with Chris Boucher. IQ is going to set a back screen for Chris Boucher. What Chris Boucher does because of how they defended this pick and roll is he kind of sits and hangs on that screen and he transitions over here and IQ shoots out of the top. RJ dribbles wide to the left to draw the defense farther away and then hits IQ for a three. We got the same play. Now, of course, in this play, Kelly Olynyk is in the, I guess, strong side corner, and Javon Freeman Liberty is in the weak side corner. And that's great. We got this later in the game where the Raptors ran the same play. It worked the same way. IQ comes clear, and they get a huge closeout to him. So he swings it to who? It would be Grady in the corner, and Grady hits a corner three. Very nice to see. So, and on top of that, also, he didn't end up hitting it, quickly missed this shot, but the Spain started to, they ran it again, and Spain started to load up on the action to where they thought IQ was going to come out on this side. And what he did instead was he completely ghosted the screen to Chris Boucher and just shot out the other side, following RJ's path, and RJ just passed it to him wide open because the Suns were loading up to guard that action. Now, the Raptors also ran this for Gary Trent Jr. with a twirl entry, basically. And so what happened was Gary Trent Jr. comes off of a down screen from Chris Boucher, then curls underneath him to set the screen for Chris Boucher, the Spain screen, and then shoots out to the opposite side. So there, Spain has a lot of stuff built out of it, like a lot. And the Raptors got by it on the other end, particularly Grady, who completely blew the coverage of it, which was, Bradley Beal just like marched down the court straight to the rim, which wasn't great. But it's a tough action to guard, and teams have gotten better at it. In fact, I used to do this podcast called Bouncing Around with Evan Gualberto, who is a very high-level high school basketball coach in America. He coaches at a prestigious school, and we used to break down game tape of a bunch of different teams across the league. We'd each pick a game and then break down a bunch of plays and kind of like what made a team work. But we had this one episode where we talked specifically about the Spain pick and roll. And we incorporated some of Jenny Busek in that. We incorporated some of Sergio Scariolo. And I brought up Jenny Busek so that I can say she has publicly lauded my work, which is like a nice little, when NBA coaches give you props publicly, you have to talk about it, because the private stuff, you don't want to share anything. But anyway, we made this whole episode talking about what teams run to get into Spain and what are the typical defenses against it. Now, because there's been so much Spain run in the NBA, some of that stuff is obsolete now, but they are some of the baseline packages to guard it. But we used to do all that kind of stuff. Jacob Tarasov says, what is the Rubio connection? The Spanish national team popularized the Spain pick and roll. That's why it's called the Spain pick and roll. Sergio Scariolo is very closely tied to it. Although I can't remember, it's another European coach who actually invented it. Obradovic, if I'm remembering correctly. I'm not sure if I am. But the Spanish national team kind of popularized it because they had so many ways to enter into that action. Anyway, we talked about Spain. I showed you the diagrams. The Raptors ran it a ton late and got like a whole heap of great looks. But even more important than that in this game, I think that Emmanuel Quickley just running regular pick and roll, really, he started putting guys in jail. He started using extra dribbles in the lane. He had way more patience. And some of that, I think, is that Nurkic is a little bit more of a plodding big man down there. He's not going to jump your dribble, so you can work slowly. Same with Drew Eubanks. And on top of that, like, sometimes they're not even necessarily playing a big. Quickley took that room to kind of like stretch his legs and see what he was able to do as a creator. And he really came in like fantastic form and fashion with 18 assists, only 2 turnovers. He was masterful. I'll have a piece tomorrow on the site of where I'm breaking everything down. But man, it's a very encouraging game. This is a game you feel proud of Emmanuel's approach, because he was methodical. He was quick when he needed to be. He was slow when he needed to be. The shot making wasn't unbelievable, but it was certainly good enough. And the passing, I thought, was just like right on time. 18 assists is no joke in the NBA. Of course, assists are a little bit easier to come by, I think, these days than maybe other eras of the NBA. And Darko has definitely designed an offense where they pass a lot and all that kind of stuff. But 18 assists, and most of it done out of the pick and roll. Him like getting wider and wider. It's been really, really great. Ed A says, have you noticed any improvement with Quickley and not killing his dribble too soon? I'll have a piece diving deeper into it with like some film tomorrow. Not a YouTube piece. It'll be on the website. And, you know, Emmanuel has been better at this. His pacing has really improved in the pick and roll, and his numbers on the season, definitely, he's much more effective passing to a roller or passing out of the pick and roll. The numbers, the Raptors score a lot more points per possession when that's the case. He's not totally comfortable as a scorer yet, but we saw some of that too late in the game, like getting to the shot in the middle, like getting just like keeping that dribble alive, using the escape dribble into the middle of the lane for like a push shot. That's kind of great stuff right there. And so Emmanuel, I think since the All-Star break, has been really, really impressive. A lot of assists, larger volume. The last time I looked at it, I think his touches per game were maybe around like between 58 and 61 prior to the All-Star break, and then afterwards working at about like 78 to 80. So he's getting a lot of the ball, getting more room to operate, and he gets to try some things out. And in doing so, we get a 21 point, 18 assist, 9 rebound game. I think Keeks tweeted it out. Had he gotten that 10th rebound, he would have been only the second player ever besides Kyle to have a triple double with 15 assists, which, I mean, makes it sound like Fred probably had a triple double with like 14 assists or something like that, or maybe 13. But regardless, the Raptors got an incredible performance from Emmanuel in this game. He was an engine offensively. RJ, we talked about a little bit. We'll get a little bit more into that later. And Gary Trent Jr., 11 of 22, 30 points. I think Nesta earlier on had said this was a really quiet 30 point game. It was. You know, Gary gets all these opportunities just kind of in the flow of the offense to bite off as much as he can possibly chew. And Gary, I think, has a pretty good sense of when he has it going and when he doesn't. That's why his volume fluctuates a lot, because it's not every night that you can go 5 of 13 from downtown with like 3 of those makes being insane pulls off the bounce. And 11 of 22, he made some like contact layups at the rim. He came off of those dribble handoffs curling into the lane and actually made some shots at the rim. I thought he was great. You know, I see somebody on like every single podcast, they'll comment and they're quite concerned with like Gary, how he's been discussed, This game, you get to go nuts. I thought Gary was sublime in this game. He was very impressive. His shot making was completely necessary. And on top of that, too, I thought that his ball pressure on defense is pretty good. He did get burned a couple times, but that's going to happen when you have to provide ball pressure defense and the back line is comprised of Kelly Olynyk, Chris Boucher, et cetera, et cetera. A lot of fun things in this game. Grady gets to play 30 minutes. He hits 4 threes, 10 attempts, massive volume. We love to see it. RJ is efficient, quiet, composed, all that good stuff. Gary was great. Emmanuel was unbelievable. And Chris Boucher gets a huge run in the second half. That was like, man, really, really big difference maker as far as energy. Ed A says, I would love to see how many of IQ's assists created a substantial advantage in this game. I'll look at that as part of the piece. So just make sure you go to RaptorsRepublic.com tomorrow and something will be out regarding that. Keir Doyle says, Gary has been surprisingly decent defensively in a much harder role of late. Yeah, I think he's typically been, when he's off ball, it can be kind of like toothless, feckless, right? And when he's asked to, you know, take an assignment, it can really swing a lot on being active and being like aggressive and being kind of a detriment and over pursuing players. But he leans towards ball pressure. He's not the best at it in the NBA, but it's certainly his best skill defensively. And so when it's going well, he has a really quick route to impact on defense, and he has been better. Ochai, tough game. I mean, like he did get fouled. Like KD hacked him from behind, and he didn't. You know, that's not really fair. But 1 for 6, you know, missed his three, and particularly like missed it bad. Lots of minutes for him though. He did his darndest, man. Like his compete level was really good, but I've said it on the podcast. I've said it, you know, when I was on the Raptor show. Like Ochai, he needs to be like a little bigger. It would fit his play style so well if he were just a little bigger, because then some of that physicality. Oh my, OG3 literally just said, I feel like Ochai needs to be 6'7", not 6'4" for his play style. Oh, great. Yeah, we're on the exact same page, OG3. It would lend itself to that kind of stuff, but the fact that he is like 6'4", 6'5", he gotta bang some triples, and he gotta make some shots. And 1 for 6 and the 6 for 20 game and all that kind of stuff is not gonna cut it really. But there's not a lot of pressure on these Raptors, and they're doing their darndest in these games to compete with all the guys that they can. I mean, the injury report in this game was really, really long. And, you know, honestly, they're scrapping, man. OG3 says he's going to write that quickly piece before me. Watch out. Honestly, get to work right now. Hit my email and I'll publish you as a guest writer at Raptors Republic tomorrow morning. Please and thank you. Then I can go to sleep a little bit earlier, considering this was a late game. Because obviously, you know, Blake had his... You know, he had the emergency appendectomy, so I had to go downtown to take care of Brody, so I didn't get to write the piece today. I was busy transiting, but for anybody who saw Blake's tweet, he's doing good. I saw him today. He seems to be in good spirits, all things considered, although that sucks. An homage to OG Anunoby, obviously. Coco says, Ochai, the same height as Trey. No. I've spent a good amount of time next to Trey, and I've spent an okay amount of time next to Ochai. He's definitely taller than Trey. Less handsome, though. Trey, handsomest man in the world. Okay, we're a bit far field. Let's talk about the defense. So as I said earlier on, you know, the Raptors went from throwing a lot of attention on post entries to wings and on drives to being a little bit more reserved on those actions and then collapsing at the final moment. And I think that really did lend themselves to a win in this game, because you never know. Like, was Trey Murphy always going to hit 10 threes? No, it's not always going to shake out like that. Was Grayson Allen always going to hit 8 threes, 7 of them in the first quarter? No, it's not always going to work out like that, right? And the Raptors, once again, made a bet on being able to move the ball out of Star's hands and see how that went. And that bet bounced back in a really bad way 2 games in a row. It was a much quicker adjustment in this game, all things considered. And like, KD still went to the line 12 times in this game. He still got 19 shots. He still scored 35 points. He probably could have gone for like between 45 and 50 if the Raptors didn't start out the game doubling, throwing so much attention. But a credit to the Raptors is like KD is a guy who isn't going to take it all the way to the rim. KD is a guy who is a little bit more limited as a playmaker, considering how great he is as a scorer. And so they wanted to move the ball out of his hands. And honestly, I like what they tried to do early on. It didn't work. Maybe the adjustment should have come a little bit sooner. But also on top of that, the adjustment did come quicker than people thought. It's just Grayson Allen was hitting from like 27 feet. And then the Raptors like doubled in the paint and it went side top side. And Grayson happened to be the guy in the corner at the end of it. So it seemed like they were still in the same scheme because it's the same guy hitting threes. But things changed pretty quickly for defensive approach. And the Raptors did get back into it. And I thought that their like man-on-man defense was pretty good, especially for guarding up a lot of the time. Like RJ and Ochai spending so much time guarding KD is tough. Grady spending so much time guarding Bradley Beal is really tough. And like Grayson being able to burn Gary is tough. But man, this was a scrappy performance from the Raptors tonight. We all see the roster. Even if you're just like a box score watcher, you can see who played in this game. You can see what the Raptors front court situation is. You can see what their bench situation is. Nobody should delude themselves into lofty expectations and then being disappointed and then like, I don't know, being upset with players or coaches or anything. Like this Raptors team has not been built to win games, which tough. I know it's more fun to watch a team that wins games, but this team is not built to win games. And then they've been ravaged by injuries. It's just not happening, right? So you look for the wins where you can. And there were very clear wins for the Raptors in this game. Most notably, you know, Emmanuel Quickley, who we talked about a bunch, who have a piece out. RJ, I said I'd talk a little bit more about him later. There were a couple plays where I was like, ooh, I would have loved the pass on the drive. And the Suns are kind of like a sneaky team in that sometimes they can all converge and there will be a really, really big block or something like that. And RJ got caught on a couple of those, which was like, damn, I wish that wasn't the case. But still, you look at the overall impact, the fact that the Raptors can, like, it's really nice that in crunch time against a very good team, RJ can be the ball handler for the primary action, that they can run, you know, Spain leak, and they know that RJ has enough gravity as a driver to shift the lane defense over so that the roller comes clear, so that the team has to worry about the roller, which opens up the leaking for the triple. Like, it matters. If that's Patrick McCaw, sorry to Patrick McCaw, but if that's Patrick McCaw on ball, they probably stay home, right? And like, nothing much is happening there. So RJ has that. He can move the defense and you get a play out of that and quickly gets to move off ball. These are wins. You know, honestly, you take it. Eric McLaurin said, I'm sure the ladies will survive if you zoom in on your little notebook and go a minute or two without showing your face. I did like 4 minutes of the notebook. Eric, you're late, man. You missed the boat. Sorry, but you can just like go back in time. These are all cataloged. If you want the notebooking, this one right here. I do have to. I wonder if like next year I'll get like a whiteboard or something like that. But yeah, so RJ, pretty impressed with his game. And it would have been nice to see like more and more volume because he could have taken more volume. It was there if he really wanted to, but it's tough. It's tough to just do that every game. And like 23, did anyone really see themselves turning their nose up at 23 points, 4 assists, 1 turnover on 56% shooting from RJ Barrett, 3 of 4 from downtown? Do you really want to turn your nose up at that? I don't think so. Yeah, good game from RJ. And just like the backcourt in general, like, I know Gary and RJ are kind of like a flex at like the 2-3, but, you know, IQ, Gary, RJ, you got a lot of production there. That's like really, really great. Keir Doyle says you should look at getting tactical pad, Samson. Can drag magnets and draw arrows on the screen and screen share it as a live tactics board. Honestly, that's a good idea. I could really, really elevate this kind of stuff if I did that. So yeah, that is a good shout. I know you're probably saying that because you probably do something like that for your footy content, or I should say like soccer/football content. Saying footy content online has like connotations probably. Nesta says decorating tip. Take a cue from Nikki Nurse and plaster your walls with all the play sketches. Yeah. It could be like Pepe Silvia from It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia. Like all the things just look nuts. But anyway, OG3 says RJ also has some random really good on-ball defensive possessions that are nice. Yeah, it can be good. And RJ, particularly when he gets to hang with a guy based on his strength instead of quickness. And honestly, some of it is definitely related to RJ, like knowing that guy's tendencies and being able to kind of like do the early work defensively, beat him to spots. He can succeed. It's just, it's not something we've seen a ton of. But honestly, and I keep saying this because people pick and choose who they like depending on the game. And I feel like, you know, commentary can be really slanted. A lot of guys have struggled defensively. Even some of the favorites have struggled defensively. We don't pay it mind, but during this run of play, some of the favorites have struggled defensively. We don't pay it mind because, like, you don't want to focus negative energy, but some people do get a lot of negative energy. And people really care about RJ's defense, and that's not to say it's been good, but there's a lot of guys who have not played good defense on this team, and RJ seems to get, like, a lot of flack for that. And I don't know if that's people trying to, like, project in the future because he's a staunch part of it and we haven't seen the upside. Maybe that's the reason. But anytime RJ does something good, people always want to say something bad, I find. But them's the breaks, you know. You can't account for what people are going to say, obviously. You kind of just have to steam ahead. Let's talk about Chris. 11 points, 9 rebounds, 5 of them offensive. I was asked last podcast why Chris isn't playing. And, you know, and I was asked why I didn't ask that after last game. And honestly, I guess it's fair that I didn't ask because he played today, probably because of like some injuries. But I was in my mind, I was thinking that Chris is too palpable a winning player. Like, he will affect what's happening on the court. He just can't not affect it. Good or bad, he will be affecting. He is active, and he immediately jumps into this game, and I think brings like a great deal of energy to this Raptors team, gets them extra possessions, battles on the glass, is like a good roller. That was his big, I know he hit 34% of his threes in the Tampa season and kind of was like letting loose, but a big reason for his ascension within the Raptors organization was that, you know, it opened up an opportunity in the front court in Tampa. There was still like Kyle Lowry was there. Fred VanVleet was there. There's a lot of rudimentary rolling plays where he got to show off his pop, and he still has pop as a roller. He still has pretty good timing. He still keeps that passing window open and he can finish at the rim. 11 points, 9 rebounds in short order. I think he should be so proud of what he did tonight. I think that like he was just really impressive. And I tweeted out, you know, I've talked about Phoenix kind of being interested in Chris before, and it's no wonder they've honestly, like, it's no wonder Phoenix has inquired about Chris in the past and a couple times. And you could hear it on the Suns broadcast as well, too, is like they're saying, man, this guy, every time we play him, he's just grinding, creating good outcomes, doing all this kind of stuff. Like, and he does. I don't know what it is about Phoenix. Gary also typically plays pretty well against Phoenix. You never know why a player does it. Sometimes you can look at the, you know, the matchups and all that kind of stuff. Phoenix has been, I guess, a thin front court for a few years. And even Ayton, he had the one really good season, but their front court has been thin for a few years. And Chris just comes in and runs roughshod over what they try to do. And he was impressive tonight. Chris, I have long, you can go look at my history as a writer if you want to comb through thousands of hours of talking or whatever. I've long been a Chris Boucher defender and a believer in his, like, that he's a good rotational big. And yeah, I thought he was sublime tonight. And I think that he is good enough to be in a lot of rotations in the NBA. Maybe too good for what the Raptors want to happen this season. You know, maybe it is more important for them to lose games for a draft pick. I don't know. There's like a lot of people who view it from top down who do think of it that way. It's tough for me to say one way or the other, right? Because you want to build good habits. You want to play competitive basketball. Yeah, it's kind of like I wish he were getting minutes. I think he deserves minutes. I thought it was going to be somewhere that wasn't the Raptors. You know, and I said it before the trade deadline. Like, I thought that he was going to be traded at the trade deadline. It obviously didn't happen, but yeah. 1800 Lunatic says, LOL, Samson, you watching the games illegally too? Alex Stockton says, do you normally listen to the other broadcast, Samson? I do listen to the other broadcast. Not illegally, 1800 Lunatic. Why would I say something like that? That's ridiculous. And Alex Gwynn says, I hope Boucher can find a good team. Would you have any in mind? I mean, we just watched one. He will be on an expiring next season. I don't know what happens with him. Obviously, Boucher can't go anywhere now. He's on the Raptors till the end of the season. And I don't know what the plans are for him in the summer or for next season. But I imagine there'll be a few takers. One that I think would be interesting is the Nuggets. Like, I think Chris Boucher could give you some minutes next to Nikola Jokic. And maybe he doesn't factor into their playoff rotation. Maybe it's like more touch and go with him there. But I think in the regular season, they could win some minutes. Alex Stockton says, I like the idea of him on OKC as a bench guy. Yeah, I could see that. But they also might want a little bit more beef in their front court. But I'm sure, like, he just might be a little bit too duplicative over there. Although Boucher can find impact on a lot of different teams. But yeah, that's kind of what it is. Norman Huntley says, doesn't get enough playing time. If Raps were healthy, wouldn't be playing now. Be nice if he could beef up a little. Darko's not going to give him enough minutes. Chris Boucher, I think, has his whole NBA career been trying to beef up and has added probably like from the time he came in, probably like between 15 to 20 pounds of muscle. And that's really impressive. I don't know how easy it is as a person to add 15 to 20 pounds of muscle. I've never done that. You know, most people who aren't athletes are more concerned about, like, you know, losing weight, you know, cutting weight to get to, you know, whatever their ideal is. I don't want to push anything like that. But you know what I mean? That seems really difficult. And the fact that he could have, you know, add like 15 to 20, I think that was the genesis of like the what used to be the Chris Boucher Willu beef was, you know, commentary on that kind of stuff. And of course, they did a podcast and collaborated, you know, going forward and all that kind of stuff, Water, Bridge, etc. But Chris definitely, he's been trying to put on weight, and I'm sure he tries every off season, but I think we're looking at mostly like Chris is who he is, you know, and who he is a good rotational big in the NBA. Nothing wrong with that. You know, it's, he's not young in NBA terms, or he's not like relative to NBA. It's just like, man, He's been a good rotational big for years. That's his career, and that's okay. So, yeah, Raptors. We talked about most of the good stuff. I guess I'll talk about Grady. He had a really tough stretch where he missed threes. Like, the ball found him. And at the end of the Hornets game, when they won, the ball found him above the break. And, you know, Raptors fans, you've watched it on the Raptors. You've watched it against the Raptors. Like, when the ball finds the right guy, everybody feels it. And on that game, Grady was the right guy. In this game, even though he finished 4 of 10, he wasn't the right guy. All that kind of stuff. And that's okay, because it's not a very good team. Grady is growing, doing all that kind of stuff. Yes, sir, yes, sir, yes, sir. All that good stuff. But also on top of that, I think that he got himself into trouble because he was like, oh, I'm not making threes. Let me dribble into the lane. Caused a turnover or two, right? Not ideal. And also, when he was guarding the bottom of the Spain pick and roll, he didn't set the edge, and which was really bad because it just allowed a straight line drive to the rim with no resistance whatsoever. Just Boo says Chris has actually spoken about how his frame and difficulty adding bulk is genetic. That makes sense to me. We are all impacted by genetics. Like, I think, honestly, you know, Aleg, my roommate, who was speaking on the last podcast, he's in school for kinesiology and, like, nutrition and all that kind of stuff. And you'd be surprised how much genetics plays into everything. Like, we are so, you can work to get to places and you can change it and do that kind of stuff. But, like, we're all impacted by our body type and all that kind of stuff. So, and Emmett Bramble says the weight thing with Chris is so antiquated. He is who he is now and moving forward. Yeah. Like, Chris is a good NBA player. You know, I think we see him, well, a lot of people see him and think like skinny. Don't be skinny. But he is skinny. So, he plays the way he does. If he had a lot more bulk, he'd lose some of his stuff. Like, this is Chris Boucher. Kevin Durant was playing on the other side, and while Chris is not the shooter that Kevin is and isn't, you know, one of the 10 best players ever, KD also, you know, he's not putting on weight, man. He couldn't lift the bar at the, you know, what was it, like 145 pounds or 185? He couldn't push it at the draft combine. Guys are who they are sometimes, you know. There's always these, like, weight journeys and all that kind of stuff, but I don't know. Adding muscle seems way more difficult than, like, losing it, which can be done through, like, maybe, like, nutrition and stuff like that. Anyway, that's a lot of talk about something that I'm not an expert in, certainly, and something that, you know, matters to a lot of people to be discussed correctly. Nesta says, are you shocked to see that Bol Bol has surpassed the average career NBA or NBA career length? Would never have guessed that when he came out of Oregon. I liked Bol Bol, and I was like, he's got stuff. I like when it was the bubble and he first started playing and got that first little bit of run, I was like, I'll watch everything this guy does. And I enjoyed watching Bol Bol tonight, you know? There was that one play where RJ went shoulder in and tried to, like, extend to the rim and couldn't get all the way there. And then on the other side, like, 4 minutes later, Bol Bol got stopped in his tracks, but just kind of got to step through and, like, just finger roll it in from however far away. He's such an interesting player. Am I shocked to see that? No, because I was a Bol Bol guy. So I thought he was going to be even better than he is now, to be quite honest with you. Kierdoyle says, this reminds me, Savannah meant to say striations, not stridations, on the pod when y'all were talking about Grady's shoulders. Oh, I didn't know the term regardless, and she was definitely on the right track. So, yeah, that was fun, though. Good conversation about Grady on the podcast. Javon Freeman Liberty had one really great 45 cut and ended up going to the free throw line because of it. Hit the above the break three, which was nice. The defense wasn't particularly good. It's tough. I'm saying a lot. It's tough when you're joining a team and they're not able to keep people in front of them consistently, or they're in a heavy rotation defense that requires a lot of communication and a lot of, like, sharing brain moments. Tough for Javon to, like, step in and play effective defense, and especially since he's not particularly great at defense to begin with, has improved in some sense, all that kind of stuff, but tough game for him to, like, step into. He couldn't really control for the offensive volume because that's not what he's meant to be doing. He had the big game the other night. He was just beaming. He was just such a sweetheart in the press conference. You know, I had a great time talking to him, which I talked about on last episode, but this wasn't, like, his big game. I think he'll still keep getting minutes. You know, if DJ Carton is injured, which he was out in this game, like, the Raptors played the healthy guys in this game. Jordan Wara, it wasn't his game either. Jeez, he was lost on defense a lot. And it's tough, man. Like, the Raptors don't have the strongest, you know, foundation for their defense as is. Everybody's injured. You know, actually, just as a mention, because Chris was definitely the best big man in the game for the Raptors tonight, but Kelly, I thought, super active hands. He blew up a lot of pick and roll actions by kind of, like, getting low, getting that hand in the cookie jar. He got two steals out of it, but I think he stopped, like, five of them just with that. Very heady operating in the passing lanes, and a lot of that is about, like, how you aim your hips, how you, like, occupy the space, and how the distance you play from the ball handler, which of course is impacted by, you know, the lock and trail defense coming over the top. But it's Kelly, I thought, had some nice defensive stretches, although overall I don't think it's a strong defensive game. I mean, the Raptors are just coming into this one, like, way behind the eight ball. It's the Suns team that, albeit without Booker, still has a lot of talent on there. And, you know, KD, Bradley Beal, Nurkic, I really love Eric Gordon. So him coming off the bench, Eubanks, former Raptor for what, like 18 seconds, had a pretty good game. Honestly, like seemed a little bit better than Nurkic's, like given the time. I thought that Eubanks was stronger defensively than Nurkic, as crazy as that sounds. I know Nurkic finishes with two blocks to Eubanks one, but Eubanks' mobility seemed a little bit more impressive to me, although Nurkic finished with, you know, 7 points, 14 boards, 5 assists, not a bad line. But this Suns team is good enough to beat these Raptors, especially these injured Raptors, is what I mean to say. Really weird stat line, 10 points, 8 rebounds, 6 assists for Royce O'Neal. And you know what that is? That is pump, put the ball down, make the pass, and the pass ends up going to Grayson Allen, who hit 7 threes in the first quarter. You know? Coco says, was nice to see Scotty back with the team, though, supporting. Certainly, certainly. I'll admittedly do not spend a lot of time watching benches. I know, like, fans definitely spend a little bit more time, especially if there's a lot of just Scotty fans. And if you're a just Scotty fan, I mean, why wouldn't you watch the bench to see what he was doing? That's your guy. And I didn't really watch the bench. So I saw people talking about or tweeting about like Scotty being up and like celebrating everybody. That's great. He's an effervescent, you know, young man. He is, what did Sirit call him? A force multiplier. And he's a big personality, you know, especially out on the court. He's just like, that's who he is. And you see it anytime he gets like air and or mic'd up or has like a presence at the All-Star game or the Rising Stars, whatever it is. You know, he's able to affect and impact the people around him, not just with his play, but with his personality. And so to hear, and Nesta, you know, hammers this home, Scotty was on his feet the whole night cheering the guys on. That's great. You know, that's fantastic, because there's not a lot of teams that succeed while not being like cohesive in the locker room or like really enjoying each other's presence. The Raptors were one of the teams that won despite not being fully cohesive as a team. Really impressive. There a few mercurial personalities in that championship locker room, and they were so good and so talented that they just overrode that, which is crazy, man. So crazy that they were able to win despite like all the tensions around the locker room and that kind of stuff. Very impressive. But if you want to even be like the team that makes the mid-tier jump to be like, oh, we're the fun playoff team or anything like that, you know, your guys got to like each other. If you want to be more than the sum of your parts, your guys got to like each other. And Scotty being a team chemist, not only, you know, as much as being the best player on the team, but being a team chemist who is able to, you know, allow for chemistry, for the growth of relationships, for things to be more fun. If that's how it shakes out, then that's great too. That's very strong stuff. Cured Oil says, low-key concerned about Yak's finger, by the way. I've torn the same ligament and couldn't straighten my finger for months and still bothers me, lol. You and I have the exact same. So you have torn the ligament that Yak tore. I've broken the bone that Scotty broke. So you can see that scar there. I have a metal plate in my hand and I have no feeling in this finger, my wedding ring finger. And I'll tell you this much, Yak, probably with the coverage he's receiving health-wise, you know, rehabilitation-wise, his body, it's probably not going to play out like yours did. And the same way, I have nerve damage in my hand. I have a metal plate in my hand. I imagine I broke my third and fourth metacarpal, but I imagine probably a decent chunk worse than Scotty's. They were completely blasted into smithereens, but the suspicion should always be, the belief should always be that NBA players are going to rehab and come out on top a lot stronger than us regular folks. Like, you talk to somebody like my friend Josh, the best scout in the world, right? He's torn his Achilles. It hangs on to him a lot more than it hangs on to an NBA player, like even just in everyday life. Stay tuned for that podcast, by the way, coming soon. And we're gonna podcast about draft stuff, and then we're going to go rock climbing. It's going to be unbelievable. What a day for Josh and I. That feels like a podcast for the most part, though. We're not going an hour. I still have to write that IQ piece. Unless OG3 is in here and has already written it, I've been scrolling my Gmail waiting for you, you know, for that to pop up. OG3, please and thanks. That feels like a podcast, though. I didn't ask at the highest concurrent viewers, but like the video before you get out of here, everybody. It helps promote this to other people. I'm not really a clickbaiter, a drama stirrer, you know, a scamp or anything like that. So I'm not going to draw clicks any other way than people liking the Raptors and liking the way I talk about them. So that's how we do it. Like the video, subscribe to the channel. If you have the means and you want to support Raptors Republic, you can go to the website and subscribe over there. That is how we survive. That's how we do it. If you want the full pitch, Will and I did about 4 or 5 minutes on how important Raptors Republic is on the Raptors show together. That feels like a podcast. Thank you to everybody for tuning in. Nesta, I'm sorry that your knee surgeries have had a, you know, everlasting effect on your health. And they certainly have on Victor Oladipo as well. God, he was cool. Man, his run with the Pacers was unbelievable. Like, just turning into an all-NBA guard overnight, it seemed almost. What a cool guy. You're a cool guy too, Nesta. All right, everybody. Thanks for tuning in. Coco says she was watching, hoping to see Brody. Brody is being looked after by Blake. I'm no longer needed over there, but I did enjoy my time with Brody today. Vilifying Force says, thanks, Samson. Good work as usual. Thank you. Good work from you, Vilifying Force, as a viewer. Thank you very much. I appreciate you and all the viewers. Good. That's the podcast. Thanks to everybody for tuning in, and whether you got into this in the morning or at night, have a blessed day and goodbye.